Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Have you checked out the latest Ball Family Reserve collection from Ernie Ball Music Man? BFR is a celebration of Ernie Ball's heritage in instrument craftsmanship, which features some of the finest figured tone woods and finishes available. These rare pieces are offered in limited production runs and allow the public access to instruments previously reserved for family and loyal artists. This month features the Bongo in Wild Cherry Burst, the Majesty in Blue Steakhouse, and the Valentine in Target Burst. Learn more about where to get yours at music-man.com/BFR. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Hello there.
Jay Cross.
Hi.
And Naomi McLeod.
Hi.
Hello everyone and welcome, yes, to the 279th episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. Thank you, listener, for making it along. I need to start things off, guys, by pointing out that last week's quiz might have had some inaccuracies. So it does turn out that when I was reading out the scores,
I'm not sure why my victory music is the Guile theme from Street Fighter, but yeah. that's what it is.
Yeah, I
legitimately
unfortunately
one of the best bits of music ever written.
Oh, 100%.
I cut Jay short of 3 points. When,
three
whole points. It was an entire round that I forgot to score you in.
And that probably doesn't even include the two questions that you totally shafted me on. And didn't
yes,
give me
that
an opportunity
doesn't include.
To
it doesn't include those. That means that, in fact, Mark Packham came last with 7 points. Matthew Knight second with 8 points, and Jay Cross, you won with a whopping 10 points. The only
thank you
nerd host to make it into
thank
double
you.
Figures.
Thank
so,
you.
I don't think anyone's surprised by this because thank anyone you. Paying attention last week in any way realised that Jay won about two thirds of the way through, and yet when the results came in, you had completely muffed it up.
I'd just like to, take this moment to thank all the Guitar Nerds podcast listeners who wrote in, the death threats that were sent to Joe.
There were quite a few.
The protests that happened outside of his house.
That was
the bricks thrown through his window.
One caught
that, that was me.
My God, stuff got pretty real by the same time.
It did. And truly, thank you very much to everybody who stood up for me. I won't forget you.
It was, in fact, it did actually cause quite a lot of uproar, so much so that Matt Knight, who of course won the podcast last week when I misscored it, was so upset that he quit and we've replaced him with Naomi.
That's right.
So it is
Matt's actually, he had to remortgage his house because he
spent all the winnings on champagne.
Now he's got to pay them back. And
yeah,
he's
exactly.
In serious
yeah.
debt.
Mm. Yep. So, exactly. But yeah, no, in all seriousness, it was a great quiz, Joe. I especially
thanks,
liked
man.
All the questions that I answered correctly. that was my favourite bit of the quiz. Good work. I'm looking forward to winning another one soon.
There you
go.
Oh,
wait, no, I've got a right one, haven't I?
You've got, yeah, that's right. In 25 episodes' time. Although there has been a bit of a call by listeners for us to reverse the podcast order so that we do 25 quizzes and then do a regular episode.
I mean, that sounds good to me. I'm up
yeah,
for that.
I mean, that sounds good, yeah.
It's so much less brain power because you can just sort of cruise by and lose and it doesn't really matter. Yeah. Can't really do that in a regular episode.
I mean, I don't know if you've ever listened to this podcast before, Mark, but I assure you can.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess that's basically every episode, isn't it? We all cruise by and everyone loses.
Yeah.
So in other news, we've got Naomi from the Bass Guitar Nerds podcast on the Guitar Nerds podcast. Welcome to the... Yeah.
They said it would never happen.
We're already doing crossovers.
Strange. Let's just go with it. Collab. Yes, very 2020 right. of you, I have to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought so too. It's my plan to, of course, turn the Guitar Nerds podcast into... a Bass Guitar Nerds podcast without anyone really realizing. Of course, everyone on this podcast, I guess now, right now, is a bass player first.
That
anyway.
Is true. Yeah,
I don't appreciate.
Oh,
that
sorry.
At all,
sorry.
Jay. They also have ears and can hear you, Joe. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. Yes, sorry. Jay is an artist. The rest of us. I know you like to prefer to be called that, so I'll
yeah,
stick
yeah,
with that.
With my contemporaries, Leonardo da Vinci and others.
So this week I was recording a Friday special that's not coming out for a couple of months, and I was talking to Moore Guitars, Dan from Moore Guitars, Moore spelled M-O-A-R, have you guys checked out Moore Guitars before?
Only the photo that you sent me.
Yeah, okay, so Moore Guitars are absolutely fantastic, like super interesting. They do a number of shapes, but they're the kind of the deal is they're all very shaped, like classic shapes that have been I don't know how to say it, like sanded down to be very angular and slim and look very, very cool indeed.
Where are they based?
So Dan's actually from London, but his shop's in Copenhagen. He moved to Copenhagen about 8 years ago, set up shop there. He has a fantastic Instagram, like, you know, nearly 32,000 followers on Instagram. And he does a fantastic job of showing people the inside of his workshop and talking people through every build that he does, because it's still very much a complete custom shop from start to finish, and every model, you know, he's happy to make any amount of alterations to any of the standard shapes that he does. Or, you know, someone has recently got in touch with him and said they want to make an Explorer, which I think they're calling the Ex-Mora.
Very good.
Nice.
Yeah, but yeah, that's
like
good.
A bit of pun.
Yeah, I like that. Well, the T-style guitar that he's got is called the Moore T, which I liked.
Yeah, that's, yeah. That's I'm looking at that good. Right. Looking at those right now, and obviously, you know, as with any custom builder, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of options. One that I think is really interesting, the picture that he's gone for is like, you know, it just looks like an Ash body or something, and it's, you know, it's regular sort of T-style guitar, but single P90, which is obviously cool. But weirdly, this one here, the P90 is like almost in the middle position, which I totally wouldn't have expected. You know, if someone said single P90 guitar, you think, okay, it'll be a bridge pickup. Mm-hmm. This just isn't that at all. It's like in the middle. It's very, very odd. I'm kind of into it.
They're really cool. That was part of a series that he did called The Naked Morty. Which was the T-style guitar with a single P90, which he would put anywhere in the body, any position you wanted, and a single volume control, and it came completely unfinished to you, but with a little pot of wax for you to finish it yourself if you wanted. And so for that reason, he charged like way under a grand for it. Like it was like, I think 800 and something. And he made 14 of those. It was like a first come, sort of, you know, situation.
First served, I think, is the expression.
It's been a long day. But some people refinish them, like also on his Instagram towards the top, he's got images of a fella called Carl Blackwood who refinished one of the Naked Mortys in black, surprisingly. But I think they are awesome and super cool guitars, and Dan was an absolutely lovely fella. So I ordered one. After the podcast, I may have been drinking whilst recording the podcast, but now it's happening. So I'm excited to get this on the move. So I'm going for a Wayfair, which is his like 330, 335 style body shape. You know, sort of incredibly thin version of that.
I'm just looking at the picture here, Joe. It looks so thin.
Yeah.
Have you got a depth measurement on it? I mean, it looks like mega skinny body.
I don't have the depth. I do know that they're supposed to weigh something like 2.5 kilograms.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Proper sort of throwing around guitar. So no, I'm not entirely sure what the depth is. They're very thin, but I'm going for like three bass P. Oh, it's a bass. I'm getting a full string bass. So I'm going for three bass P90s with basic switching. So the individual pickup switches for each one, but no bass nice. Cut like you'd have on a bass six. Mm-hmm. Just the three individual switches. But I'm excited.
I can't even imagine what that is going to sound like. Like that body shape, which is obviously very thin. A bass.
Yeah.
With P90s.
Yeah. Bass P90s, yeah.
It sort of couldn't be any more Joe Branton esoteric it's going to be.
I'm going no F holes as well. I'm going for...
Okay.
Are you going to be allowed to play this live? Has this made it past the Polymath Live committee?
Well, yes, yeah. This should be fine for Polymath Live. I'm going for a 30.5 inch scale. Well, it's a wood finish, and they're not big fans of wood finishes, but I'm going for a dark wenge, so I mm-hmm. think it's going to be appropriate stage wear, as it were. So yeah, there you go.
I didn't realize there were such stringent criteria to be met.
In fairness, I put most of the stringent criteria in place because our keys player wears a lot of terracotta and mustards, which I just can't abide by. So I have to force everyone into a certain stage dress, but that includes making sure people have appropriately coloured instruments. And one of the things that we have a lot of questions over is wood grain. So, yeah. But I think this one will be fine. I think this is dark enough to make it through.
Absolutely. Are you going to push for a wenge... keyboard bed as well?
That I think would be a
wenge
great
jeans
idea. Yeah.
A full wenge keyboard, I think.
Yeah.
Black and white keys all wenge.
But
Crispy needs to invest in some new drum shells.
yeah definitely
solid wenge drums for Polymath moving forward. Drum skins, just the entire thing is
it's just a log, it's just a tree trunk.
Speaking of wood, a nice little addition that you get with every Moore guitar is you get a Moore stop. So he cuts a doorstop out of what's left of like some part of the guitar. There's a part of the guitar, I can't remember what it is, that is nearly the shape of a doorstop. So he files it down to be appropriate. And then
do you think that was the start of the business? Was he actually started selling doorstops, and he just found that, like, you cut out this really perfect part of the it's this really perfect part of the tree for doorstops, and he's just left with this thing that looks a bit like a guitar. Previously he'd just been chucking them away, and he's found that actually he can use that bit of wood to build a guitar afterwards.
I think that's quite likely. I think that probably is the
maybe
case.
Maybe that's why the guitars are so thin. Maybe he was making guitar-shaped doorstops to wedge under the door, but then he's, you can actually just play these. They're really good.
The old wenge wedge.
Ooh, is that what happened, Joe?
Yeah, almost definitely. I imagine so.
I can't believe you didn't ask these questions. These are important. These are the sort of questions that we want to know.
I'm sorry. I was getting excited about buying one. I think,
we've just spoiled a Friday special that's coming out in 2 months' time.
That's right. People will have forgotten by then, hopefully, what we've said on this podcast. I know we will. So,
I mean, 5 minutes after we switch off, it goes out of my brain. So
exactly. So
I'm writing everything down.
Oh, that's good. I also this week got some more plectrums. Not more the brand. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, they also made out of wood.
That's the other thing. I was like, I didn't mention this on the podcast with Dan from Moore, but I assumed his last name was Moore because it's spelled M-O-A-R, and he's like, oh no, that's not my last name. It's called Moore, like that from the Malmsteen thing.
Oh,
from the Malmsteen quote. Yeah.
Oh, Moore is Moore.
Yeah.
Right.
How can less be Moore? more is more. It's from that Malmsteen quote.
Wow. I like it.
So there you go, which I thought was rather cool.
Before you move on to Plectrum Show, can I just talk about my bass quickly?
Well, yeah, you could have added it to the notes of the podcast.
Yeah,
so
sorry.
I knew it was the next subject. Then I would have segued you in flawlessly.
Well, I would have done if I cared. So the this week, I actually, I don't want to turn this into the Bass Guitar Nerds podcast, but I actually did for the first time this year, I think, get my bass out of its gig bag. There's been no reason to, because why would you play a bass at home when you don't have like a band practice or a gig or whatever? So yeah, I finally got it out of the gig bag, and it was just in a terrible state. The setup was so bad, and I thought, like, okay, right, I'm going to actually fix this. So I did two things. Firstly, I took the saddles off and cleaned the bridge for the first time since I bought it in 2002 or 2003. Oh, wow.
Haven't you done like 500 plus shows on that?
Yeah,
bass?
Yeah. There's like 17 years worth of grot under the saddles. So I gave that a good clean. But also the machine heads that have been broken, one of the machine heads that's been broken since about 2005, I finally got around to fixing it with the help of J Cross finding some difficult to find machine heads for me. I did a full setup on it. First time I've done a full setup on that bass. Yeah, probably since like 2008, something like that. And it's just always been reliable. But I think a year of inaction and a year of like literally just being sat in a gig bag had taken its toll on it.
What strings did you go for?
Oh, always the regular Slinkies. Yeah, I'm always the, what are they, 5105s, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know they had a name. I didn't know they had a name.
What?
Like a
what?
Number.
What?
The regular Slinkies.
Yeah, no, 50 to 105.
Oh, that's what they are.
Joey, you okay?
I didn't realise they were 50 to 105. If he'd have said 50 to 105, I'd have been like, oh, that's the gauge.
That is what he said.
That is what
he said. 50 105.
Yeah, 50 105.
I thought it was like how D'Addario number strings. I thought that's what you were saying.
The hyphen was silent.
Yeah.
I understand.
So, yeah, like I did a full setup on it, and it's playing much, much better. It was a bit like a sort of bow and arrow when I first pulled it out of the gig bag. Mm. And I did a bit of recording with it, and I was like, do you know what? This is not working. So, yeah, give it a bit of a spruce up, and removed, like I said, 17 years worth of grot from under the scratch plate and also under the bridge. It was it's very cathartic.
Wow, yeah, that... Yeah,
sounds bloody horrible.
It was. Yeah, it was disgusting. And in fact, when I took the machine heads off, the headstock under the machine heads is like a completely different colour than the rest of the exposed stuff. And I think that's partly just exposure, you know, to sunlight and, or not sunlight, but to light in general and stage lights and stuff. But also partly because the rest of the bass is just so disgusting that under the machine heads hadn't been kind of gummed up with just dirt. It was I sent you guys some photos, and I think you were rightfully disgusted.
Yes, it was pretty rank. Naomi, you finally got your Bronco bass back over.
I did. My long lost tiny short scale lover is back in my company. So I'd been separated by lockdown between UK and Ireland from all of my gear. So it finally returned to me just 2 weeks ago, I believe. So I'm back playing a lot now. And I have to say, mostly playing it of all the basses that I brought with me. So.
And you have flats on your Bronco, which you probably said on a podcast, but I didn't realize until you put that video on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group.
Yeah, I do. I actually went for, it was ECB 81S, I think, the D'Addario flats. Popped them on pretty much when I did the mods. I don't generally care to change flats if I can avoid it. So that has been the set ever since. I actually need to double check. I'm pretty certain Labella would do short scale sets.
Yeah, yeah. I have a set of Labella 45 2105s on my little Music Master, my little 1977 Music Master.
Nice. I'm feeling good. Yeah, yeah, I have 45 105s on my jazz bass currently, Labellas, which I love. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not too much of a brand snob, and I quite enjoy or have enjoyed over the years, stumbling across string sets that have just worked and have stuck with them that way.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. I find the 45 to 105 on a short scale is too thin for me. It doesn't work. But I can't find a company that will do a custom set of flats in a thicker gauge. So I can get rounds. Like I get rounds from Newtone. Yeah, because they'll do me like a 65 to 115. But they don't do flats, and so I gave it a go with these labellas, but having them in D standard, it just doesn't work. They just
I know alternate tunings get super tricky with flats on a short scale, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Have you looked at? I should know this, but do Elixir do flats?
I don't think
they do. Like.
Their whole thing is about Zing, isn't it?
That's yeah, like saying...
I suppose it is, yeah. Just Elixir, as it happens, have had such an impressive range of single strings available. I have built so many custom sets for guitarists and bassists over the years, particularly with them, just as it's happened. So if they did do a set of flats, I would point you in that direction for sure.
They do so much stuff. I hadn't actually realized it. You know, they do like loads of like acoustic bass stuff as well.
Yeah.
But do they do? I don't think they do. I don't think there's any flat wounds. So nickel plated steel or stainless steel. Is there any? No, there is nothing flat wound as far as I can see.
Speaking of acoustic bass, I got in a really awkward situation the other day where I was
bought an acoustic bass.
No, I'm never going to do that. I'm not a fool. But I was at this party in the woods, and someone.
Where is this going?
I mean, you're really not enamoring yourself. I've got to be honest.
And someone brought along an acoustic bass, and everyone was like, "Oh, Joe, you play bass. Play some songs." And I was like, "What do you want me to do here?"
And you banged off a rendition of Polymath's first album to a very excited audience in the woods, which is just like how most of your gigs are, I assume. Yeah.
3 hours later, everyone was asleep or had left.
Oh, it's horrible. I kept getting asked for Chili Peppers songs. It was a bad time.
Just on the bass.
On solo bass.
Yeah. Yeah.
And singing.
Yeah, no, I obviously didn't do that. Was it terrible.
Wait, hang on. Someone, you had a party in the woods and someone bought just an acoustic bass.
Yes.
You should explain the fact that this wasn't like, you didn't organise a rave. Like, I feel you should talk about the fact that, this isn't you flouting lockdown rules and hanging out in the woods with thousand other I mean, obviously not a thousand other math rock fans.
Everyone there was wearing a PVC onesie. It was totally fine, like, and completely safe.
This sounds like...
It was a wedding anniversary. It's just a family event.
It sounds like some strange, like, David Lynch, like, scene. Like, something that didn't make it into Blue Velvet or something like that.
Yeah. Maybe it was similar. We did buy a Portaloo and put that up in the woods. That was good.
That was
anyway.
Just for fun. There was plenty of facilities nearby, but just did it for
team building exercise. Who can put together this Portaloo in the fastest period of time?
It was difficult. It was actually quite complex.
Happy wedding anniversary. I bought you a Portaloo. Well, Joey, anyway. This all sounds horrible. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. So you know how I got into plectrums quite a lot recently, and obviously we've spoken about the Hufschmidt plectrums, the big sort of 10 mil thick Anvil XLs that we were checking out, and of course there's Gravity, Chicken Picks, Honey, an American plectrum brand. I definitely want to get hold of some bits and bobs for. But I recently got sent a couple of plectrums from Luna Aurora, who are this very lovely little handmade bespoke plectrum company from the south coast of the UK. And they make really interesting plectrums. So they sent me a couple in a little pot, and they have a very unique shape because the plectrums themselves look like someone's taken a bite out of the sort of top corner, the thickest corner of the plectrum. Because, of course, I guess your hand doesn't really touch that because you grip on the far side of the plectrum from how you're where you're applying it to the guitar. And then it's also kind of scalloped around a sort of thumb pinch in that area. So it's very shapely. I'm very into the sort of shapeliness of this plectrum. But I've got two different types of pick from them, both in this sort of like this kind of, I don't know which type it is. I guess it's the standard smoke, by the looks of things. They call it the standard smoke Kira Knightley. And Kira Knightley, I think, is obviously the...
Kira Knightley?
Yeah, Kira Knightley. Exactly, that one. But yes, these are fantastic. Lovely little sort of very well-produced, very shapely plectrums. I'm very into these as kind of a new... as a new idea. I don't know what thickness these are, but they feel very much like over the sort of 1.5-2 mil, but because they're pinched, they feel less heavy in your hands, which I actually found really good. I found that to be quite an advantage. I thought I still had kind of enough movement around the strings, which as you get larger strings, larger plectrums, you're finding yourself having to make smaller sweeping movements across the strings. Whereas these, I thought, still gave you that sort of, you know, movability.
This has got kind of the same sort of channel as the guitar that you've been crowd sourcing.
What guitar is that?
The pink dark guitar with the
channel.
Oh,
right. I see what you mean with the channel. Yes, yes. I understand. Yes, of course. Yeah, I guess that's right. But I'm very, like, I'm looking through the Lunar Aurora range. I'm very into the Chunky Monkey, which is like a huge glow in the dark plectrum. And it looks like, if you look at the Chunky Monkey, that very much looks like it has a channel where you grip, because then the plectrum actually comes out to quite a substantial thickness. It doesn't say a thickness, which is why I want to know how thick they are. But
I guess it varies so much. I mean, what at that point, what are you measuring? Because generally with plectrums,
oh, yeah,
they're the same thickness the whole way across,
exactly.
Whereas this starts quite thick, gets considerably thicker, then gets quite thin again, and then gets thick again at the end. So, I mean, I'm not really sure what part of it you would measure.
That's a good point. Maybe that's why they're on them. But they look fantastic. I'm really into these guys as a brand. They're really interesting. They look very well, you know, very well made.
How do you make something like this? What's it made out of?
I don't know. I always assumed you you suck it like
you
a sweet until it's sort of... Until it sort of makes the shape.
Is it like cast? I guess it's cast in a mold. I don't know. I don't know.
I think it's best that we don't speculate, because we don't know.
No, we have no idea.
This could get quite risky fast.
I'm quite happy with it being a mystery. But yeah, these look absolutely fantastic. And listener, I think you should check them out if you get a chance. Lunar Aurora. They make wonderful plectrums. Now, before we move on to the news, did everyone see the Dunnable that got posted on the Guitar Nerds forum recently? facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds forum.
I didn't, but you've posted it here, so I'm looking at it right now.
I mean, we haven't spent that much time talking about Dunnable before. I think we have given them a little bit of airtime, but they're a brand that we really should be way more on board with than we are. They make some absolutely fantastic models, and, you know, they made a Cyclops recently, an aluminium necked shell pink Cyclops with a torque guard, and it was a custom order for a customer who changed their mind, so they popped it up on their shop. But oh, listener, you absolutely have to check out this guitar. Has anyone actually spent much time on Dunnable as a brand other than myself?
I've never played one, but they, you know, they always look fantastic. And yeah, this one in particular, what I like is got that retro aesthetic, in that it's got the kind of old sort of TV style knobs on there, and, you know, it's got the trapeze bridge and stuff, but obviously, you know, the aluminium neck brings it like right up to speed with modern construction, or future construction, I should say. Yeah, it looks really nice, really nice. It gives me that kind of like, is it Maton? What's the guitars that Josh from Queens of the Stone Age plays?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean, but I too don't know the name of the brand.
I'm going to look it up right now, but it's giving me that sort of vibe, like kind of like squat sort of retro vibe to it. Yeah, it looks super cool.
Yeah, yeah. I've always thought that Dunnable makes fantastic guitars in that they're such a wonderful fusing of like retro and modern that I think few other companies manage to do very well. It's especially because the sort of people who are into those heavier music tend to veer into more modern stuff than classic stuff. But Sasha Dunnable is, you know, fantastic at making these wonderful hybrid instruments. Of course, he's in the band Intronaut, and I think very much, you know, Intronaut of, you know, a perfectly, you know, fully formed money making band, you know, without him going off to do Dunnable guitars as well. But they make some absolutely fantastic looking stuff. Everything that I see come from Dunnable is something that I want to buy. Very reasonably priced for a custom shop as well.
The there's a bass on their Instagram that looks great.
Oh, you're probably talking about, let me guess,
I'm looking, talking about the Thunderclapper,
yeah.
Yeah, which I'm really into. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, it's a take on a sort of P-style bass. I mean, there's a couple there that look really, really nice. Just a nice take on a classic design, as it were.
Yeah, yeah, they're fantastic. I mean, I think the R2 is the shape that I see come out more from Dunnable than anything else, which is very much their...
Is that the sort of Thunderbird-y style one?
It's the RD style.
RD, yes, sorry, one. That's what I meant.
So, yeah, I see that sort of the most out of all the stuff that comes from Dunnable, but it's very cool. They've done a couple of double necks as well, which I've been very into. But, yeah, they made like a half bass, half guitar double neck. Absolutely what I want. I still keep thinking about buying that Dan Electro double neck, the half bass, half guitar.
Why not? Treat yourself.
I might well do that. They're very cool indeed. Anyway, we should dive headfirst into a big old barrel of news. News. First up on the news for this week, Jay Cross, you're going to tell us all about an incredibly expensive Fender release.
Yeah. So this is the Brent Mason Stories Collection Telecaster. I don't know if you remember, I think it was at the start of this year, the Stories Collection was launched with the Eric Johnson 1954 Virginia Strat. And basically the idea behind that was kind of taking the guitar of a famous guitar player and recreating it in the, you know, as a one-off instrument, as opposed to just doing a custom shop reproduction, or as opposed to doing a new signature model. This is very much, this is the guitar of the individual that they used, and we're going to recreate it like that. So the first one was that Eric Johnson Virginia Strat, which was, I think, I can't remember the ins and outs of it, but there was some sort of weird, like, the body was from 1954, but the neck wasn't, you know, he swapped the neck out or something along those lines. Anyway, Brent Mason, for people who don't know who he is a, like, probably underselling who he is as a performer here, but like largely known as a Nashville session guitar player.
Okay, I didn't know who he was. That's good.
Yeah, so I actually hadn't realized how long he has been a Nashville session guitar player, but apparently he has recording credits dating back for over the last 5 decades. Played with some big names, played with Dolly, played with Shania, played with, like, you know, lots of the sort of country legends across the years. Has won lots of awards from the Academy of Country Music, like which is, they've got a fantastic, the Academy of Country Music, I think, is the sponsor of the Country Music Hall of Fame museum, which is in downtown Nashville. If you ever are down there, I would highly recommend going and doing that tour. It's fantastic. But yeah, he won Guitarist of the Year like 10 years in a row in the night, like throughout the 90s and into the early 2000s. And basically, the reason that he is such a prolific session guitar player is because his guitar has got literally everything on it. Everything that you could possibly want, any option, this guitar's got it on.
Does it have a piezo?
Okay. Everything you could possibly want except a piezo.
Right, okay.
So what this does have is three Seymour Duncan pickups, including a mini humbucker in the neck. It has got a Glaser bender system or Glaser bender system.
I believe it's Glaser.
Glaser bender.
I believe it's Glazier.
It's not that.
I don't think it's Glazier. But yeah, so the Glaser system is interesting because you can switch whether you make it a G bender or a B bender. It is a little different to the sort of classic Parsons White string bender that most people are familiar with when you think of a bender.
What would you have it as?
What would I have it as?
Yeah.
G, I guess. But, you know, I'm also not the... I've never won the Academy of Country Music Guitar Player of the Year Award.
Have you not?
I've
won it twice.
Have you? Yeah. When did you win it? It must have been after the 90s, because that was only Brent Mason.
I won it in 2001 and 2001 and a half.
I'm going to check this. Good. I'm going to check this. I'm not convinced. Anyway, carry on whilst I look this up.
So... yeah, there's just loads of stuff on it. It's mad. You've got a three-way selector on there. So interesting that you can only run the
three-way
pickups.
Selector.
Yeah, interesting. You can only run the pickups individually. I hadn't realised that.
But then it's got three rotary controls, all squeezed into a sort of tele bridge plate.
Yeah. Where else would they be? It's a telly.
It's just not longer, and the buttons aren't smaller, so they're quite tightly packed in.
So it's I'm just looking right now. It's an individual volume for the middle pickup, so it's like a blend for the middle pickup.
What is the middle pickup? It looks like it's made from wood.
It's a hot stack strapped middle pickup by Seymour Duncan. Have you heard of them?
No.
Oh. Okay.
So it's got a push-pull on-off for that as well, so you can blend it in and... push it on and off to mix it in with the other pickups. So I'm guessing.
So you can use this as a conventional telly, I guess, as well.
Yeah, so I'm guessing. I'm just trying to find out some information about how that's wired. But I think it's basically the three pickup, the selector switch is regular telly switching. But then at any point, you can also blend in the middle pickup and you can turn it on and off with the push-pull as well.
Guitar Nerds is brought to you in association with Faith Guitars. Based right here in the UK, Faith Guitars are designed by British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle, who has been hand-building guitars for decades for some of the biggest names in the business. Founded in 2002, Faith Guitars have been voted the UK's best acoustic guitars 5 times in a row by both the public and panels of music industry experts, so you can be confident in your new Faith guitar. Like all quality acoustics, Faith guitars are made of all solid tone wood, so you can be sure they'll start off sounding great and improve year on year. Faith don't use laminated woods, but you'll be pleased to know that despite the all solid tone woods, the superb specification and handmade construction, Faith guitars are still affordable, with prices starting at around £450 or $600. Discover the range at faithguitars.com and then visit one of the many UK or European retailers to try them for yourself. But hold up! If you're in the USA or Canada, you can buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com, and by using the coupon code NERDS at the checkout, you can get an exclusive 10% discount. So, in the UK and Europe, check out the guitars at your local dealer or faithguitars.com. But for North American listeners, buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com and use the coupon code NERDS for a special 10% off at the checkout. That's USA coupon code NERDS at the checkout. Faith Guitars, award-winning acoustics designed right here in the UK.
That's quite good. That's quite sensible. This is definitely a very...
guitar?
Yeah, I guess that's exactly what it is, isn't it?
But so the thing that's cool about it is this whole idea of like the stories like selection of guitars. So yeah, this has been apparently shaped that to match his specific guitar. So his guitar is based off of like a a 60s Tele that he has, and yeah, they've like matched the shape exactly, so it's probably a little bit off of what you would expect from a normal modern Tele. Right. And I mean, this like series just excites me a little bit, because I just sort of wonder what's next when you think in the world of like historic instruments. You know, this is a thought experiment that we've done a number of times, you know, whether it's the Francis Rossi Tele or whether it's the Bruce Springsteen Esquire. You know, there's a lot of very famous historical guitars out there, and yeah, it's just cool to think about what could come from this collection, this ongoing series.
Yeah, absolutely.
Am I wrong in thinking there's a cheaper model as well? As well as this custom shop one, there is a more affordable guitar as well, right?
There are two. Yeah,
two right. Models. So
you can get, there's a $2,500 model and there's a $12,500 model. But yeah, I think the $2,500 model seems to, you know, be relatively production line from the custom shop.
Yeah, so as far, and Jay, you might want to correct me on this, but as far as I know, for some reason, I thought that the cheaper one didn't have the B-Bender system, but it does. So, yeah, the two models available. I think one, the Stories Collection one, I think is the custom shop limited edition, $12,500, but there is also a kind of more, from what I understand, there's a more standard model, which is just the Brent Mason Telecaster. But yeah, Jay,
Stories one is also relict, I believe. The Stories version of it is also relict, whereas the custom shop is unrelict. I believe that's the.
I can hear Jay furiously typing.
I don't know. So it's having a look. I didn't ask me to go this in depth, Joe. You just said talk about Brent Mason. I didn't realize I was gonna,
but they both
go in. To answer your question, I think the Stories Collection, I don't think it's custom shop. I think it's just high-end American. I think it's like it's like a American original or something like that, so it's that sort of spec, which is why it's $2,000-ish. Right. And then the custom shop is the relict one, and that's the one that will be like a custom shop expensive version, in the same way I'm sure that was the same with the Eric Johnson. But
yeah,
I did a
quick bit of googling on that, and I believe that is also the case with the Eric Johnson.
Yes, but yeah, that was in January, which feels both a million years and like yesterday, so I can't really remember the ins and outs of that, but
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Yeah, Very cool. And it's in grey, you know, everyone's favourite colour.
No, but it's a lovely, like, it's a nice primer grey. I'm actually very into this colour. This is the best bit about it for me. Like, in this time of Fender only producing things in sort of, you know, like, poppy pastel colours, this is actually a colour I can get behind. Yeah, these primer colours are cool. I'm into this. I mean, I'm not into a 12.5 grand price tag for a Tele, but, you know, this is still a very, very cool guitar indeed.
Did anyone ever play the original Brent Mason signature made by Valley Arts? Because I did.
And, did you?
Yeah, and it was really good. Yeah, there was a time back in the day when we were at GAC where we were stocking Valley Arts guitars. I can't remember whether it was before or after they were bought by Gibson. Can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, for a while they did his signature, which was basically exactly the guitar that Fender are, or, you know, very close to the guitar that Fender are putting out now. You know, tele pickup, the stacked pickup in the middle, and then the mini humbucker, the three controls. But yeah, just not with the classic headstock, with a slight variation on the headstock. But they were really cool, really, really nice. And kind of a weird thing to say that I've played, you know, it's, yeah, they were very, very unique. Nothing like that at the time. So yeah, cool to see the official Fender version. Seems like a cool little thing.
Yeah, very cool indeed. Now, as we've spoken about Fender, I suppose, you know, Naomi, we should talk about what Gibson are bringing to the table this week.
I suppose we should indeed. So Gibson are releasing the Lucas Nelson 56 Les Paul Jr.
Another signature model. Everyone's on the signature model trend.
Indeed. Beautiful little classic looking Les Paul Jr. at first glance. So Lucas Nelson, of course, is the son of the great Willie Nelson and the frontman of Lucas Nelson and Promise of the Real, who in themselves have been Neil Young's backing band for about 5 years now, I believe.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I mean, I had actually heard Lucas Nelson totally separately. It popped up on my Spotify, and I didn't know he was part of Neil Young's backing band, so that's pretty awesome in itself. But back to the guitar, it is a beautiful Sunburst Les Paul Jr., modeled on Lucas Nelson's own 1956 model. And they've added a few minor modernizations in the appointments, the main one being in the hardware. Featuring a higher gear ratio for improved performance. It's a lovely sunburst finish, which in this model they've actually developed a specific sunburst modeled on the vintage patina of Lucas's own.
It does look, even though it's not relict, it looks like an aged sunburst, the way they sort of go very two-tony.
It does, doesn't it? I always refer to it as a handsome sunburst when when it has that kind of vintage two-tone, very definitely black by the edge of the instrument look. Also features a fat 50s style neck, and a single slab mahogany body, mahogany neck, and a rosewood fingerboard with dot inlays. So
it looks great.
It looks it great. Does, I mean, this it? Is like, the least signature model I've ever seen. But
the one is. I mean, I'll be honest. I had to go looking for what the signature appointments were outside of the very classic model. Yeah. And I kind of admire the subtlety of them. I like that he's basically taken his favorite instrument, his reliable toured guitar, and basically said, "I want to release this to the wondrous public."
Yeah, I mean, you know, you absolutely cannot go wrong with a Les Paul Jr. You know, Mark, you would be testament to that. But this is a fantastically, I love how simple this offering is from Gibson. Mm-hmm. Price-wise as well, at $15.99 US, this is less than I expected it to be.
Yeah, that to me, but I'm just doing a bit of reading because I'm wondering, is it a satin? Yes, it is. It's satin body, or satin finish. So I'm guessing it's going to be more like the kind of faded series, which is fine by me because, you know, I kind of love those sort of thinner skin nitro finishes. But because this is sitting at around the kind of same or ish price as the regular junior that they're doing at the moment, which is a gloss finish. And, you know, you would kind of expect there to be a bit of uplift for the fact it's a signature. And I believe they're also slightly limited edition as well. I seem to remember reading.
Is the neck fat Is it like a Fat 50s neck on
a standard?
Yeah,
it's a Fat 50s style neck.
Oh, on the standard one, though, as well, is it?
I don't know. I've not actually tried one. I need to go and have a look. But yeah, I can't see it here in the press release, but I remember reading somewhere that they're... Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought they were a slightly limited edition.
I'm just trying to work out if it's like a better buy than a standard one.
I think it just depends what you're after, because I'm pretty sure that the standards are like a gloss finish, like gloss nitro, and these seem to be satin. I mean, personally, I think this looks better just because of the sunburst that they've gone with. I think it's, yeah, like we said, it's a bit more kind of authentic to the... to his actual 50s one. But I think it will just depend on whether you want a gloss finish or a satin finish. Personally, yeah, I'd go with the satin. This looks amazing.
I think this looks fantastic. I mean, a good time for Gibson to release something like this when Eastman have, with their SB56s have just kind of landed and become available worldwide
for
very, very similar money for very, very good guitars. But of course... You know, it's not just with Eastman, it's not just that you're not getting Gibson on the headstock. That lower horn does have a different shape. And I think that's, you know, that's something that you can either get behind or not. Like, if you need that full kind of Gibson experience, then even though the Eastman is absolutely probably a better built instrument at that price point than a standard junior, it's whether or not you can get behind the fact that it's very much not a junior.
I'm just looking at some pictures of this Lucas Nelson now as well. The other thing is that it's like a light back. You know, it's not the black from the edge of the sunburst doesn't carry over onto the back. So it's got like a kind of, like brown sort of cherry.
Wait, what, so is it a burst on the back? Or
No, not at all. But it does, the black doesn't carry over. So like on my example, it's I guess what you would call like a dark back, where the black from the sunburst is the colour of the back of the body and the back of the neck. This is like a kind of brown mahogany style back, and it just looks super nice. And also looking at some more in-depth photos of the finish, the satin finish looks wicked. It looks really, really good. I'm kind of tempted. Like, the last thing that I need is another Les Paul Junior, but this looks really good. The other thing, it's got the proper bridge on it as well, angled wraparound bridge, whereas mine is like straight and compensated on the bridge itself. And it's got the proper neck joint on it, which is where... the heel of the neck isn't like flush into the body, which mine is. You know, if you're to run your hand right down the neck, you don't hit a heel there. It goes right into the cutaway, which is pretty common on the sort of 2000s reissues. Well, not really issues, but just the Les Paul Juniors they were doing in the 2000s. Whereas the modern ones, I think really starting with the Billy Joe Armstrong Les Paul and then the new 2019 or 2020 models, have that thing of you run down the neck and then you hit the heel like you would on the original 50s versions. And this has that. So it's like a super authentic, you know, reissue of a junior. And I think the satin finish as well, if you're playing it loads, is going to wear really nicely as well. I'm really into this.
Yeah, I'm into this at the price point. This is fantastic in that case. Yeah, okay, I can totally get behind this guitar.
This seems like, again, like I said, I can't find anywhere now that does say limited edition, but I swore I saw that to begin with. But this strikes me as one of those guitars.
Buy them now.
Well, it strikes me as one of those guitars like the Billy Joes, where they were, you know, what were they, like 800 quid new or something, and now they go for like 1,500 quid secondhand or 2 grand secondhand. It seems like one where people will be like, oh yeah, no, if you want a really good junior, like, get this one, and that will drive the price up in the future.
Yeah, yeah, soon to be sought after.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, we've spoken about Gibson, we've spoken about Fender, so I guess there is one more company that needs to release an instrument this week, and it is, of course, Gretsch. Mark Packham.
Indeed. So Gretsch have just announced the, bear with me, G6636 TSL Players Edition Silver Falcon.
Their names get catchier all the time.
Indeed. And so this is the latest addition to the Players Edition range, the Silver Falcon. Key thing is it's a center block model. And as with all the other Players guitars, the idea behind them is that it's kind of classic designs, but with sort of robust features for a modern player. There's not a huge amount really to talk about. You know, if you know kind of what a regular Falcon guitar is, this is everything that you would expect from that, with the center block. The other thing is slightly smaller body than a regular Falcon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why? Oh, what? So just they, because that's a modern appointment?
Yeah, so they describe it as a slightly smaller 16-inch double cutaway body and chambered spruce center block that enhances body resonance for a more organic tone and comfortably lighter weight.
What's an organic tone?
You know, it just sounds like wood, doesn't it?
Sure.
So high sensitive filtertrons in there, and the Bixby is, yeah, so these are the things that they kind of call the like the player's features. So you've got a Justomatic bridge on there, GrovTech nut, one of the Tusk XL nuts, and the Bixby B7CP. It's just a load of features and things like, you know, locking, Grover strap locks, and locking tuners on there as well. They're not like,
oh, very nice.
Yeah, not like period correct features, but just things that, like, you know, if you're into Gretsch but you want to take a Gretsch out every night and play it every night without some of the hassles that come with a Bixby and non-locking tuners, this kind of solves that issue. In the style of a silver or a, you know, a Falcon guitar, but with some features that make it infinitely more usable if you're using it on a regular basis.
Yeah, 100%. I've always been a big fan of the Player series for exactly that reason, you know, simply because it's kind of Gretsch being like, what are the problems with Gretsches? And of course, they are all those things, that they are such like big-bodied, old-school instruments that, you know, that when it comes to sort of modern application, they can fall down slightly if you're not, you know, completely obsessed as I am with, you know, things being specifically year correct. But I love that they make this series that's a bit more like, these are the adjustments that a modern player would make to a Gretsch if they needed to take them out all the time. And I love that they have that out as a series. Not by any means their most affordable range either.
No, this is, Jay, remind me the price on this one. I know you looked it up before. I can't remember.
I think it was it,
it was like three and a half?
249, I think it was.
No, $3,499.
Right. Yeah.
US?
So just a couple of things about it. I'm just actually doing a bit of a deep dive on what it means in terms of the features. So what I really like about it is things like the locking tuners, right? You think locking tuners, very modern. You can always kind of tell a guitar's got locking tuners because you'll either see it on the tuner itself or it will have a kind of big chunky back on the tuner. What I really like about these is that they've done something very retro looking, and the fact that it's locking doesn't really interfere with the design of the tuner itself. They look very, very retro. And I think, you know, I looked at a picture initially and I was like, oh, okay, you know, regular tuners. But actually, they've done something really subtle with the locking part of it to make it look like a kind of old school design. So I'm really into that.
They very much still just look like Gretsch tuners.
Totally. And the other thing that I'm into, as always, with any of the Gretsch stuff that's got this, the silver sparkle binding. I mean, it's just one of the best looking things that you can have on a guitar. Like, it just looks so cool. So cool. Silver sparkle binding all the way down the neck, round the headstock, and also the silver sparkle truss rod cover looks wicked as well.
Yeah, they look... it looks super cool. I'm excited. I'm excited by this. I'm excited to see some new instruments come out this year. I tell you what, the end of this year is going to be the easiest Gear of the Year podcast series that we've ever had.
Well, we're not going to do it, are we?
Yeah. We'll just put pause it like everything else this year.
Do a rollover.
Yeah.
For 2021. Well, that'd be good. I could get behind that. I could get behind that. Now, before we, you know, before we finish up this podcast, I can actually hear. I can hear in the distance. There it is. Yes, those are the dulcet tones of the question duck, ushering in that we are moving into the question segment of the podcast.
I think it's more like question seagulls this week, isn't it? I can hear
Jay's seagulls are so loud. I had to turn down my mic at one point. Dear listener, I do apologize. The amount of Jay podcasts these days on the roof of his house.
Yeah, the internet's just not very good inside, so I have to sit out up. All these seagulls are just worried that I'm attacking their nests, but I'm not. I'm just podcasting on the roof. I mean, what's weird about that?
Honestly, he gets pecked half to death by the end of a podcast episode each week.
I'm just giving back to Mother Nature. So
yes, anyway,
I thought it was some sort of purposeful Atmos.
Yes, yeah. Well,
to be honest, I'm quite disappointed that it's not.
I used to make them close their windows, but then I thought, you know, that listeners aren't necessarily, well, you know, like 50% of our listeners are in the States, and I thought they might want to hear some sort of, you know, large dog-sized seagulls that we have in
are you talking about me?
In Brighton. Not at all, not at all. But,
forget,
you know,
about Corona. Those are the biggest threat to my life whenever I go out of the house. Oh, just, yeah, getting dive bombed.
The once or twice a month that you leave your house.
Yeah, I watched a seagull eat a rabbit whole.
It's true.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so we are in the question segment of the podcast. So we should start this off. Jade Courts asked us, what is the best guitar for all situations? If I wanted the best guitar for cover or wedding gigs, what would give me the best range of tones and sounds? The best range of tones and sounds good at the same time. That's Jade's question. So the ultimate all rounder. Maybe should we start? I won't throw Naomi at the deep end. Actually, let's start with you, Jay, and then we'll move round the room. What would you go? Best all-rounder guitar that you could recommend for a listener?
I mean, if you need to be switching from... If you're doing wedding gigs and you're switching from, you know, a bit of Chic to a bit of The Killers, or from a Britney Spears rock anthem to a Queen rock anthem...
We get the point.
I guess... Maybe like an HSS Strat. That's probably, I think that's probably what I always used to recommend when we were at GAC. Because it's like, if you want, I don't know if you heard that. There's a boat outside my house. Yeah. Big honk. I live really close to a river as well as the sea. It's quite strange. But yeah, there's like always these big boats.
I thought it was a harbour.
Yeah, I guess kind of. I mean, there's a harbour there.
There's
as
lots
well.
Of lumber. Yeah. There's lots of lumber there.
Yeah, there's lots of lumber there, yeah. Yeah, the lumber harbour. The great lumber harbour of just outside of the greater Brighton metropolitan area. Oh. Anyway, HSS Strat would probably be my choice there. You know, you've got your neck pickup there for all the kind of funky bits, and you got the bridge pickup for when you need to rock out to Mr. Brightside at the end of the night. Yeah. That's probably what I would suggest. I don't know. Any disagreements there from the team?
I think a DK24 is, you know, a Charvel DK24 is an excellent suggestion for an all-rounder that, you know, in that sense, if you're going to go down that HSS line, because, of course, the other important thing about versatility is that it's pink. Charvel can offer that.
Known to be the most versatile finish of all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
would that make it through the Polymath branding guidelines? Oh, probably wouldn't, would it?
No, absolutely not. Everything
is that why
to...
you don't do wedding gigs? That's the only reason why.
Yeah, yeah. Black or Sunburst or Silverburst. We let Silverburst in recently, yeah. So that's those are the three colours.
Can I introduce you to a little guitar called the Fender Brent Mason Signature Telecaster? Because if you're looking for something versatile, I mean, I've not heard one yet, but I imagine with the combination of pickups on there, that will do basically everything.
Well, I mean, at a classic wedding gig, you need to be able to bend both the G and the B at various times.
And so, you know, as it's switchable, what you would do is, you know, wait till the interval, everyone's having a bit of dinner, switch it from G to B or whatever, and then you do your songs with the B bending.
Is that like the country music equivalent of playing a song in drop D? Just being like, hang on, when we were kids and people would switch... Between, you know, I say that, I assume your band still does this, Joe, switching tunings and stuff. I don't know, whatever.
Oh, yeah, we change guitars at least twice a gig.
No, but I'm not talking about switching guitars. I'm talking about changing tunings in the middle of a set. Being like, oh, yeah, I've just got to... Everyone just talk amongst yourselves for a bit. But that's what country music
is. That's why we switch guitars, because we have to change tunings.
Well, yeah, half but this, Jay's talking about that kind of amazing thing that you would see when you're in a like a college band or whatever.
I see what you're saying.
You go to a gig and someone would be like, hang on, yeah, okay, that song's finished. That was in standard tuning. Now we're just going to talk. Someone do a joke while we drop to, you know, D standard or whatever.
No. Yeah. It would be for the final song, the band play their heavy song where the lead guitar player has to detune their guitar to drop D, and the rhythm guitar player puts their guitar down because they only sing for the final song.
Yeah, classic.
That's the classic sixth form move.
So just to be clear, so you know, obviously you're saying an HSS Stratocaster you think is the most versatile guitar. And Mark, you're going to be suggesting...
I'm saying the Fender Brent Mason Telecaster.
Okay. Naomi?
I wish I had a wild card that wasn't a Strat, but I'm only speaking from function band experience and the guitars I've seen and witnessed and played with and heard the most of all have been Strats, have been HSS Strats as well. I've played with three guitarists, I think, whose regular function gig guitars are HSS Strats, incidentally. So I could have had a hotter take had I gone before UJ. Yeah. But yeah, last in, nothing too hot to add. Incidentally, I would put in a shout for Tellies as well. It was a Nash T63T. Is the guitar that has cut through the most in any function gig mix I ever have played with. So yeah, theoretically I would have said Strat, and further to that HSS Strat for that little bit of chunk, depending of course on what genre you're playing through. But yeah, Strat would be my vote.
Yeah, I do think it's inevitable that that's going to be the choice for most versatile guitar. Whilst there's a very, very specific tone, and I think, you know, I'd maybe lean towards the HSS more than a standard Strat if you're trying to do a bit of everything. I was trying to think creatively and be like, you know, come on, we can't avoid set neck mahogany guitars on this. They can do a lot of things as well. And you know, I was trying to think of like a, do you remember the Gibson Les Paul Les Paul?
Yeah. Les Plus.
Les
the
Plus.
Les Plus. The Les Plus. I was trying to, you know, think about that because that was the heyday, like 2015, the year that Gibson decided to do everything. Because, you know, you go to the Les Plus, you've got an adjustable brass nut. I think you've got robot tuners on that, so you don't need to worry about tuning.
No, I don't think so. Not on the Les Plus. I think that was the year before. I think the Les Plus was 2014.
They were 2015, but there might have been 2014s as well. I just because I'm
I think they were only 1 year. if sales at GAC were anything to go by, I think they, which was weird because I thought they were cool.
They were 2015.
Okay.
I'm looking at the GAC demo right now that says 2015.
Me too, yeah.
Les Plus.
I didn't want to say, but yes, I was doing the same thing. But yeah, you know, that's versatility for you, not having to tune. That's the solution, right there. I mean,
I would say, and you know, I was being pretty flippant with the Brent Mason, but like that guitar has got like everything on it. But to be honest, it sort of comes down to like I think it's less about the guitar. Like I genuinely feel you could do a function gig with like a Les Paul Junior. You know, as long as you can vary up your playing style enough, if you got some pedals and amp that will make different sounds, like, yeah, it would be great to have like a neck pickup and stuff, but you can sort of get away with anything in any situation. And to me, that's kind of why I feel like, you know, we've talked about it before, but like the P-Bass is the best bit of design ever, because you can sort of adapt it to do anything. You know, there's like,
sure,
funk that's P-Bass, there's metal that's P-Bass, there's punk that's P-Bass, there's like pop stuff that's on a P-Bass. And I sort of feel like if you just had a Les Paul Junior or like something basic like a Tele or something like that, you know, as long as you can adapt your playing enough and you're making the right sounds with pedals and an amp and stuff, it will generally fit with anything, and it's a very unfussy way of doing it.
I also think it's important to remember that if you're playing weddings and you know, weddings and functions, generally people don't care. What they're listening to is the choruses. And so as long as you're having fun and you like the sound of what you're playing, it doesn't really matter, because as long as you play Mr. Brightside at the end, everyone will come away happy, whether you're using a Yamaha Pacifica or whether you're using a Schecter Omen Extreme. Just, you know, slip Mr. Brightside in at the end there. and it won't matter. It really won't matter.
That's an extremely valid point. I think once you're cutting through the mix and not some sort of hyper muddy low end guitar that would struggle to cut through keys in the band, you're pretty much set, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, the last wedding I went to, which was just before lockdown, the band didn't even have a guitar player, and it sounded great. It was wicked. I'd say my favourite bit of that actually was when they played Mr. Brightside. That song is so good. It's so good.
That is ultimate wedding anthem.
Clearly. Well, yes, there you go. Right, one more question before we go from Philippe Gassner says, what baritone should I buy with a budget of $1,000 to $1,500? Now I'll start this off because I'm a big fan of baritones, and recently I've developed an obsession with the Gretsch, the G5 260, and they also they did exactly that model with a Bigsby as well, and I think they added a T to the end of that name, the G5 260 T. But the great thing about that Gretsch baritone is it's actually, unlike a lot of baritones which are a 27 inch scale, they went to the full 30 inch scale, so essentially can be strung up as a bass six. And I think we spoke about this some weeks ago on the podcast. I think when the first Bigsby version came out, it actually was strung up as a bass six, and it's later been sort of, you know, redone as a baritone. But certainly the older one with the Bigsby dot inlays, unfinished back and neck, very, very lovely. $599, so way under that sort of $1,000 mark. But if you get the new one with a stop tower, you get these lovely colours, like they do London Grey, and there's some sort of jade colour. I can't remember the exact name of it, but a lovely, subtle, rich Gretsch colours, but with a gorgeous sort of V stop tower and big block inlays this time, which look absolutely lovely. I can't recommend those enough. I think they are the best looking, best value for money baritones on the market. And this is from someone who's looked around a lot for interesting baritones. When I realised that there are so few, you know, nice bass sixes that I liked, I was started looking for baritones with a 30 inch scale. And I think that is definitely an option. Naomi.
You had me at 30-inch scale. Mm. I have to say that is quite a nice touch. I didn't actually realize that of the Gretsch model. My shout under the $1,500 US. Sure, okay, would be the Reverend Descent, if you're familiar, available with or without whammy, I believe.
Why is that so popular on a baritone? Like, I don't know what you'd use it for. I guess it is that surfy thing.
Yeah, for sure. I have to say I don't think I've seen a whammy used once on a baritone, and I specifically have sought out baritone music before. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Lethierry of Snarky Puppy fame,
yeah,
and his baritone funk series, which is pretty fantastic. If anyone is in need of checking out a fine example of baritone playing. But yeah, the Reverend Descent, as I said, would be my shout. It's £879. Not quite sure what that would work out at in dollars now. But yeah, so chunky design. You've got the rail hammer hum cutter pickups on there. Yeah, got a pickup switch between the two, and a plain third on the strings as well for easy bending.
Ah, there you go.
So yeah, so as you say, Joe, it's an interesting
rail hammers on a baritone are an excellent shout. I'm really into this as an option just for the fact that I'd have rail hammers on there. They're just such fantastic pickups, and I think every experience for us when we've had a Reverend with rail hammers has been incredibly positive. I think they're a fantastic pickup choice. And yeah, this looks certainly very cool in the sort of body shape of this same body shape as the Jetstream model, but with a baritone scale neck. And you get some excellent finishes as well, including a purple burst, which
And Surf Green. Surf Green looks really good as well.
Oh, really? On the baritone?
Yeah.
I couldn't find her. Oh, right. Sweet.
Surf Green maple neck.
Can I mention something completely different to either of the ones that you've looked at? And it's something you'd have to do a bit of digging to find a second-hand one because they haven't been made for a long time. The Ibanez Triple M1, the Mike Mashock baritone, only produced in 2003? No, sorry, 2003 to 2008. They are a, like, I think... It must be mahogany body. I'd have to do a bit of digging. Yeah, sorry. Okay.
Did you say Triple M?
Yeah, Triple M. Mike Mashock model.
Why is it three M's and not two?
Because it's the Mike Mashock model. In the same way that Paul Gilbert is the PGM.
I understand now. Okay, this makes more sense.
So.
Have we not spoken about this before?
We talked about them a long time ago, yeah, I think.
My first guitarist has one of these.
Oh, really?
This is his guitar, yeah.
There we go. So they're a through neck. I believe they are mahogany body. Yeah, through neck mahogany and purple heart for the three-piece neck construction. They have Ibanez Super 58s. Obviously it was designed. Mike Mashock, I believe...
Stained?
Maybe stained, yeah, stained. Something like that.
I'm sure it's stained now, yeah.
He's from Stained, yeah. So it's obviously designed for metal and stuff. But if you want something very different to a kind of surfy baritone, like the Reverend and like the Gretsch and Dan Electro and that kind of thing, if you want something that's a bit thicker sounding, this would definitely do it. Strung through body, so, I mean, it's about as kind of thick as you're going to get sound-wise. 28-inch scale length. So yeah, it's not designed to be like E2E. It's definitely a kind of B2B guitar. and yeah, I just remember them being super cool. And I bet if you can find one now, they were like a satin finish. So I reckon that if you find one that's had a few years of play, it will probably look really good. And then I bet the neck will feel really nice as well with kind of played in. So yeah, I mean, that would be my choice. And I reckon you could probably get one for like 750 quid. I mean, I can't imagine there'll be more than that. So it'd probably come in at about, 1,000 USD secondhand.
So back when I was in, my punk bands, Superheroes Anonymous and Four Dead Squirrels, those punk bands.
Sure.
The guitarist, Ben, in those bands played an Ibanez MMM1 Mike Mashock stained signature. And I remember when we went into Tuba Talk, which was one of the two guitar shops in Watford.
Tuba Talk.
As in Tuba.
It sold tubas.
Yes, it sold mostly sheet music and brass stuff, but had a little guitar section. No, it had a decent spread of guitars in there, to be fair. For us
Tuba
kids.
Talk.
Tuba Talk. That was the name of the guitar shop. The guy who worked there was the spitting image of the front guy from Coldplay. I cannot emphasize how much they were the same person. It was incredible.
I'd love if that was a secret job by Chris Martin. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, did you check? Was he actually the same person
running Tuba Talk in Watford?
He was lovely, very kind, which I imagine Chris Martin to be very lovely. So it could well have been the same person. But we went in there to buy. Ben was trying out different guitars. We were very young, at this point in time. And he was trying out the Ibanez MMM1, and the guy was like, I think when Ben asked to try it, the guy went, this is a baritone, because I think Ben had obviously been trying. Like, we were in a punk band; he'd been trying like loads of strats and stuff, and then the guy was like, this is a baritone, and neither me nor Ben knew what that meant. At that point in time.
So you went, yeah, exactly.
I remember us going, sure. And Ben liked it and bought it. And it was only when we realized that he couldn't get his strings up to East standard for us to play that we looked up what, on the, the fledgling version of the internet back then, we looked up what baritone meant. And I think at the time I was playing an Epiphone EBO. So the worst kind of bass to try and get down.
Yeah, so you can down-tune and he can tune up.
Exactly. But since Ben has managed to get a set of strings to go up to sort of E standard, on the MMM one. So it is definitely possible. Whether it's healthy, I don't know. But I actually always thought that guitar sounded fantastic. And yes, I did. I shortly after that, actually, I think that led on to a real dark point in my history, where shortly after Ben bought that and we realized I'd need to come down in tuning, I went on to the internet and purchased I wish I could remember the brand, but they were one of those brands that only existed on, you know, on the internet. Like, you certainly weren't going to find them. Shine. There we go. Shine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
I purchased myself a Shine six-string bass.
I know exactly the one that you'd be talking about. We did used to sell them at GAC.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah,
it was about £300, I think.
I remember them. Was it looked sort of like, was it like a jazz bass style?
Oh, I mean, it was very modern. I remember it being like, you know, it's sort of orangey, very bold wood finish, very glossy.
I know the exact one, actually. It was the one that was, it looked almost like a Yamaha sort of TRB style.
Very much. Yes.
Yeah, I know the exact one, Joe Branton, and I cannot believe you bought that for a punk band.
Yeah, I think stuff went downhill from then, so, you know, you don't have to worry too much. Like, I remember
Joe Branton's life jumped the shark the day before he bought this Shine six-string jazz bass.
And that is the reason
I've literally
I am
been
I am
speechless.
Now.
Literally speechless at the thought of you playing a six-string. Whatever happened to three chords and the truth?
Exactly.
It's obscene.
Jay Cross, we haven't given you a chance on your baritone of choice.
Well, so actually, I just wanted to pop back to talking about the Reverend Descent for a sec. Something that Naomi said that kind of piqued my interest was about the string gauge. So I just wanted to jump back to that for a sec. So these have got 12 to 68s on them. Now,
that's not very heavy at all.
Well, no, but having that plain G being a 26 on a six-string guitar, I can't find anything else that uses a plain G at that thickness. So, like, the closest that I found was the Not Even Slinkies have got a 24 as a plain G. And I remember, like, for some reason, stringing up a guitar with those ones, and I just... It's like trying to move a barge across a canal. I don't know. 26 is absolutely phenomenal. That's amazing. So, really, that's quite something. And that's actually Reverend's. The strings that are on there are some SIT strings that are made specifically for that guitar. Or specifically for Reverend. So that is very interesting, something that I didn't know there. So that's cool. Just jumping back to the question, I think this is like, what was it, $1,000 to $1,500?
No, $1,000 budget.
$1,000 budget. What? Oh, okay. Just because there isn't... $1,000 to $1,500.
Okay.
There isn't really... there's not really much when you get up past a grand. I mean, we've... obviously wax lyrical a number of times about like the Beer Baritone, the Chapman models. Those are fantastic, and you know, Rabir clearly knows what he's doing putting together a baritone like that. You know, there's the more recent like Squire model, like the Paranormal series, the Paranormal Cabernet, which is really cool but really cheap. And then there's kind of, once you get past like £1,000, there's not really a huge amount until, I guess, there's like the Stephen Carpenter model, the ESP. But those were, I don't even know if there was a six string. I think it's just 7 and 8s, isn't it?
I think I was only aware of the 7, to be honest.
Yeah, no, there's an 8. I'm sure there's an 8. In fact, yes, there is. Yeah, there's an 8. And it's kind of weird that there doesn't tend to be much in the way of that kind of like, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 quid or dollar mark. I guess that's probably what I'd be looking at, either the Reverend or the Beer, depending on what sort of style of music you're looking to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Beer, I think, maybe something we didn't talk about enough in this sort of lineup. Yeah, an absolutely fantastic guitar, and yeah, you know, designed by a fantastic player as well. Yes. Well, this actually draws us to the end of this week's free episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. So you can, of course, listen to an entire extra episode of the Guitar Nerds every week over on our Patreon site, patreon.com/guitarnerds. You can also find that in the description of this podcast. This week on our Patreon episode, we're going to be continuing to take questions from our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitarnerdsforum. And to become a Patreon supporter, it costs only $1 a month, and you can enjoy the podcast ad free and early. Or $5 a month will get you the podcast ad free and early, and access to our entire back catalog of Patreon special episodes and mini series. And then at the $10 tier, you can become an executive producer and enjoy everything I've already mentioned, plus the prestigious honor of having your name sung in a podcast outro song. Now, I realized once again, for the second week in a row, I completely forgot to introduce our new patrons at the start of the episode. So, you know, I'll very quickly do that now. So thank you very much to Michael McVeigh for upgrading to the $10 tier. You'll be joining everyone else on the $10 tier as I continue to struggle to fit all of your names into the pre-written strong and also song. And also to James Ketch. Thank you very much for joining us.
Legends. Follow us.
Yes. Thank you both. Legends. That we are ever closer to that to mod mode, as it were. Yes. But you can follow us on all the major social platforms with @GuitarNerds and join our Facebook community at facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Butterworth, Simon Milbourne, Marcus Al-Kadawaki, and Stuart Robson.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.